This is A New Angle, a show about cool people doing awesome things in and around Montana. I'm your host, Justin Angle. This show is supported by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and the University of Montana College of Business. Hey folks, welcome back, and thanks for tuning in. Today, I am speaking with Justin Short and Eliza Donahue. Justin is a licensed clinical social worker in Bozeman, and Eliza is a backcountry skier based in Big Sky. We've gathered today to talk about dealing with trauma in the mountains, something familiar to many of us here in Montana.
Skiing, to me, had always been a safe place and a way to process and move through hard things, and suddenly it felt really scary.
For several years, Justin has led the Loss in the Outdoors support group, of which Eliza is a member. Justin, Eliza, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell us, where did you grow up and what did your parents do? Eliza, let's start with you.
I grew up in northern New Mexico. My dad worked in Taos, and so I grew up on the mountain there. Mm-hmm. He's been a ski instructor there for, I think, over 40 years now.
Wow.
And my mom has worked in conservation for a while now. She works for a nonprofit. She's in the process of retiring, but works for a nonprofit that is setting aside a ranch that was going to get sold off and parceled out as a trail system. So she's been a trails manager for that preserve for a long time.
So how did you make your way to Montana?
I transferred to MSU in 2017.
Okay.
And finished out college there for 3 years.
And you've been patrolling up at Yellowstone Club for how many years?
This is my third season there.
Okay. And I would assume pretty active backcountry skier, life in the mountains, all those sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's always a learning curve. But yeah, I started backcountry skiing when I moved out here.
Awesome. Justin, how about you? Where did you grow up? And what did your parents do?
Yeah. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. So okay. City boy from the South originally. I come from a split family. There was a divorce that happened when I was about 9 years old or so. Mm-hmm. So on one side, my mother was a paralegal. My stepfather worked for the federal government. And then my father is kind of a nonprofit entrepreneur person. He and my stepmother, who was a professor of nursing, or was, she actually retired a few years ago, were very involved in the homeless community in Atlanta, providing services and advocacy around that as an issue. Moved out here in 2007 because my wife is from here and her family all lives here, and have no plans on going back to the South. I love being here. The mountains really do speak to me. And my first visit in 1998, when I went to Yellowstone, it was just like a whole other world.
Yeah.
I had no idea that things could be so beautiful.
So give us sort of a professional summary. How do you sort of locate yourself on that landscape?
I am a licensed clinical social worker. I also have a master's degree in public health. I went to school for both at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, back in the late 1990s. I've been in private practice going on 10 years now, and I primarily work with folks with anxiety, depression, trauma, and grief.
Trauma is a word that kind of gets bantered around a lot these days. What is the working definition in your field?
In general, trauma is best described, I think, as any emotionally overwhelming or stressful event that leaves an impact in you physically and emotionally for quite some time, well beyond the event. And some people also say that trauma is not really in the event itself. It's in the nervous system and your body's ability to either adequately move through the trauma, or maybe there's a threat response that's still stored in the body that needs to be excavated and worked on a little bit.
Okay. And it sounds like, according to that definition, thinking of it as something that can accumulate and sort of be a stressor over time.
Absolutely.
And affect our capacity is maybe an appropriate way to think about
That's a very appropriate way to think about it. Yeah. Especially for people that are in jobs that require exposure to situations where daily they're having to deal with highly stressful events. And if there's not the right kind of community or support or internal tools or techniques to regulate the body, stress can accumulate over time and significantly impact one's ability to have relationships, to find joy and meaning and purpose.
Eliza, as Justin says that, I'm thinking of you and your work. You're in a position that explicitly, by design almost, deals with people experiencing trauma, has to be on a somewhat regular basis.
Yeah, I think to some extent. Yeah, absolutely. I was listening to an interview recently with Laura McGladry, who's been doing a lot of work around stress injury and trauma with the outdoor industry.
Responder Alliance.
Responder Alliance, is her the organization that I believe she founded. Mm-hmm. But yeah, something she was saying was that it's one of the most common injuries that we face, and it's also one of the injuries that we don't receive much training on. And so trying to flip that and get more context for people, especially as they're entering the industry, to be able to take care of themselves better. Because I also think even if you're a recreationist, to be able to move safely in the mountains, you really need that self-awareness and that emotional skills to be able to make safe decisions.
Sure. Has that been something that you've been trained on in your preparations to be a professional ski patroller? I assume there's pretty rigorous training on the ins and outs of first response and snow science and those sorts of things, but the emotional pieces of the job, any training in that space?
As a whole, it seems like industry-wide, every year, even since I started patrolling 3 years ago now, it's become more and more part of the lexicon, and it's being integrated into the beginning of the season, the trainings that we do. Certain patrols are using the language from the Responder Alliance as a way to start their day. Checking in with people within this, what they call the stress continuum, and seeing where people are. But every patrol does it a little bit differently based on their needs and kind of their culture. So I think that it varies a lot. But I think for us, we've started to integrate it more. And I think as a whole, I think there's a long way to go for the industry in general. Like we're starting, and there's a lot more we could be doing.
So let's talk about the group that you started, Justin. Lost in the Outdoors. What is it, and how did it come to be? Why did you think this was an important thing to initiate?
I have a history of leading groups. I've led hundreds over my career, and I had most recently finished leading a dementia group for caregivers that I led for about 5 years. And then I took a year break. And during that entire time, I was working with clients, and I was starting to get more ski patrol folks come into my private practice. It wasn't anything I necessarily tried to market. It just happened. Several of them over the years would ask, okay, so it's great working with you personally, but is there additional support I can get outside of our time together? And I would do research, and basically the answer is, I don't think so, unfortunately. Mm. And I'm really sorry, but there's not a group I can refer you to. And basically 2 years ago, I just got sick and tired of saying there's no place for you to go. And I just thought, I'll just start one.
Sure.
Why not? I mean, I've got the skill set, I've got the time, I've got the interest. I think people will respond, and they have.
And Eliza, you are a participant in the group. What was your entry point?
Yeah, so I heard about the group initially after I'd had an accident in the backcountry, just skiing on my off days, and that was in April of 2022. And essentially, I'd gone out with another patroller to Wilson Peak, and we'd skied a couloir on the north side of the mountain, and then we were on our way back up, ascending to be able to ski back down the other side and down to the car. And we ended up, my partner was up ahead of me on the ridgeline. And right as he got to the top, he ended up triggering a wind slab. And I was lower down on the slope, also ascending, and was hit by that snow and unable to arrest, and was carried through the trees. The avalanche kind of split around a sort of like a cliff in the center, and a tree island in the center, and I was carried through that and ended up fracturing my tibial plateau and the end of my femur, so my femoral condyle, and then tearing or spraining pretty much everything in my knee. And then I had degloved my thigh. It was like an internal degloving injury to my thigh and a bone bruise to my mid shaft femur as well. So I was carried down a couple hundred feet. It was a relatively small avalanche, but definitely was taken through the ringer. And then my partner came down to me, and it was really hard to tell in the moment kind of what was going on with me and my leg, because it was swelling up pretty big and a lot of pain. And we knew as soon as I tried to stand up that I wasn't going to be able to get back out. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of this hard decision of trying to figure out what was going on. And we ended up hitting SOS on the InReach that we had, which we were lucky to have.
Yeah, good that you had that.
Communication device. We're put in touch with Search and Rescue, and then Gallatin County Search and Rescue came and flew a helicopter, and were able to land pretty nearby. Good. To the base of the avalanche. My partner and I did have to descend a little ways, which was very slow going. But as far as the rescue goes, it was very smooth, and I was taken down to Big Sky, where they did a bunch of tests and saw that I didn't have a major femur fracture, which was mm-hmm. the concern. It was a hard experience physically in terms of injury, but also really shook me up and scared me a lot. And I think I was not sure what to expect mentally and emotionally coming out of that. And was having nightmares, and even looking at pictures of skiing felt really scary to me. And skiing to me had always been a safe place and a way to process and move through hard things. And suddenly it felt really scary. Yeah. There were two sort of shame reactions that I had. And the first was immediately when the avalanche stopped, and I was luckily not buried. But when I was sitting in the debris and felt immediately just so much shame for being caught. I mean, I think that we're getting better about not shaming people that are in these accidents. And still, it feels awful to be in that position. It's like, it feels like, you know, we made a mistake, and that was hard to reckon with. But then I think in the time following after the accident, there was this feeling of shame around, why am I still struggling? Mm. And why, you know, no one died. It could have been way worse.
Sure.
You know, I didn't have a helmet on. I was raked through trees.
And at that point, had your body recovered? Like, your injuries you were getting through, but you're still experiencing some of those emotional effects?
Well, I think at that point, actually, I was still pretty early in my recovery with my leg. I felt a lot of shame around the extent that I was struggling.
Yeah.
And so this group was actually recommended to me by a few different people.
Okay.
And I ended up going, and I think it's now been a year and a half that I've been involved, and it's been helpful, I think, too, to realize we talk about trauma as being a cumulative thing, but starting to understand the idea of adding more and more load. I've heard this great metaphor of trauma kind of being, if we think about our nervous system as a snowpack, like for people that work in the snow, we think about weak layers within our nervous system. And I already had those weak layers, and then this happened, and I just felt like I couldn't handle it, and it was really hard, and I felt really alone.
We'll be back to my conversation with Justin Short and Eliza Donahue after this short break. A New Angle is supported by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and UM's College of Business. Access to capital, broadband, and education are three ingredients any community needs for success.
I'm Maureen Dowd of the New York Times, and you're listening to A New Angle.
Welcome back to A New Angle. I'm speaking with Justin Short and Eliza Donahue about loss in the mountains. Justin, would you be comfortable talking about Eliza's entry into the group from your perspective?
Her story, while it's distinct and special to her, it's it's not an uncommon experience in our group, which I think is why the group is so beautiful, that you don't have to explain yourself. She's just a beautiful addition to the group. And one of the things I appreciate most about her and what other folks can do at times too is when maybe they don't have a whole lot to share on a particular evening, just their energy and their empathy and their kindness and compassion being in the room is just adds so much to the healing.
Eliza, how did it feel to turn out for your first time going to the group? How did that feel?
The first time was really scary, which I think is really common to a lot of people, because we don't know always how we're going to be received when we share things. I think even now talking about it in this setting, it's hard because I think it's easy for people to say, well, this isn't bad enough, or I don't have a right to feel this way or to seek out community and help in this way. And so, it was really hard to go the first time.
Yeah, I'm hearing threads of that similar sort of shame-based response. I shouldn't X, I shouldn't Y. Assuming you've gotten through some of that, how long did it take you to feel comfortable speaking up and sharing in the group?
I think it was incremental, and I think it continues to evolve as a space, as it probably always will over time, just getting to know people in that space and realizing that it really is a community. It's not this rigidly structured thing, if that makes sense. Like, people can kind of show up as who they are, and then you get to know people outside of the group space as well and spend time with them. And I think what's special about it is that sometimes with, you know, mental health or trauma, we're tempted to say, well, all we need to do is just reach out to people in our lives and see if they're okay. And while I think that's important, and I had a lot of supportive people in my life, we don't always know how to show up for people, and that's okay. But I think it is important to have a dedicated space for some folks, myself included, where you can go and you know that it's okay to talk about hard things. And that's kind of part of the deal, is a space where you can be really candid, and you don't feel the pressure to try and open that conversation with someone who maybe doesn't know how.
Yeah, Justin, so this group exists outside of your practice, technically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yet, what do we know about the principles of organizing and leading a group like this that can create the space of support that Eliza's describing?
I'm a firm believer that having a group be professionally facilitated would be the gold standard.
Okay.
This group, however, has been so incredibly warm and welcoming and pretty much operates by itself. Yeah. I mean, again, when I'm sitting there in group, I'm kind of a glorified timekeeper.
Sure.
The conversations are so organic and so natural, and the sharing is so genuine. So it's an open group, meaning it's open to anyone in the community at no charge that has experienced a level of loss in the outdoors. But it's a closed group from the standpoint of, I like to meet with people ahead of time.
Sure.
And make sure that it's really fit for them, that they know what to expect, because I do ask that folks come prepared to share and to know that they're going to be really scared, and there's going to be a lot of fear, and they're going to have fear of judgment and because they're also just meeting new people.
Yeah.
And right now there's some really great cohesion in the group, but that's just tough to be a new person.
Eliza described a few moments ago sort of the circumstances on which somebody recommended the group to her. What would be your recommendations to a listener who might be hearing this and thinking, oh, I could maybe use a group like that? Or what would your recommendations be to somebody who's maybe on the fence about getting help and is feeling some of the, oh, I shouldn't need that, or whatever sort of hesitance?
I would say that if there's an impetus to want to talk about it, capitalize on that energy you have and talk about it. Ask someone, go online, maybe search for the Responder Alliance. There's a great resource hub they have. There's plenty of online grief groups, because that's essentially what this group is. It's a grief group because there's been a level of loss experienced by everybody. And learning how to move with grief and to integrate it into your life and to move forward is what I think the goal is here, but doing it with community.
Sure. So as you started participating in this group and your body started healing, you're obviously back on skis now. Can you talk about the experience of returning to sport?
it was definitely a process, I think, and continues to be in a lot of ways. I think in some ways also maybe positive, in that I think carefully about who I go out with in the backcountry, and I continue to work on and think about how I communicate, specifically around being able to speak up when I'm not comfortable with something and listen to my intuition when I'm in potentially dangerous situations. I think that's really important. But it was a long process of being comfortable with avalanche hazard and seeing it a lot at work and, you know, moving around it in the backcountry and sometimes just noticing my nervous system getting pretty affected by some of those experiences. But trying to move incrementally toward getting back out and picking partners who understood where I was coming from and allowed me to be really honest and open about my experience and about some of the challenge of being there. So I've been lucky because I have, certainly partners who've been super patient with me during that.
So Justin, a lot of the activities we described today are recreational in nature, folks putting them in harm's way. As in a lot of our activities, that's part of the appeal. Mm-hmm. We sort of seek out those risky endeavors in ways. Are there things about traumatic experiences through these elective behaviors that we engage in that are different than folks who are, you know, soldiers in combat or police on the line or things like that, that are sort of more, I don't want to say necessarily involuntary, but sort of structurally part of the job? Like, we're electing to put ourselves in harm's way as a recreational pursuit.
I think when things don't go well, the inability to talk to most people about it is the most difficult part.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've even heard in my practice and in certain circles I'm involved with, well, you know, comments like, well, what do they expect? Or if anybody's going to do something like that, of course they have to know this is going to happen.
Why would you do that?
Why would you do that? Right. So there's this automatic judgment that doesn't really give the person an opportunity to explain why they do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And how, finding that edge and feeling the most alive ever, like, who, first of all, who doesn't want to experience that at least once in their life? Right. And there's people that try to do that every day or every weekend. And that's an important part about being a human being, is experiencing that high. But I think there's just, to the layperson, there's this understanding that their grief response and the kind of support they need because they voluntarily chose to do it is different than people that, you know, that's part of their job or they were told to do it or whatever it might be. The way it resides in that person's body and their heart and in their mind is it's just as significant as anyone else.
Eliza, I'll throw the question I asked Justin a moment ago to you. You know, what would your advice be to a listener who's, you know, been through something that they think they, you know, could use some help on, but maybe feels some of that shame response? Like, it should be easier for me to get over. How would you, what advice would you have for them?
Being patient with yourself is a big one. Someone said to me pretty early on in my process after this accident that I had, that your mental healing is at least twice as long as your physical healing.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really true. And it can come up in waves too. It's not so simple as this happened, it was hard, and then it got easier, and then it resolved. And it's not following that arc. So understanding that there might be times years out where it comes back around and feels really hard again. And I think that that's all okay and normal. And if it's something that you feel ready to talk about, finding people that you can do that with. And if there's a way to kind of advocate for yourself to be able to have those conversations. And I think groups like this are helpful because it's really hard to open that space with people. With outdoor accidents, this is a theme in the group that I've noticed and that we've talked about, is there's a need, and I've been on the other end of this too. Like, something bad happens and we're curious. Like, we want to know and we want to learn from someone else's mistake and their accident. And I think that there there are good reasons for that. And I do think it's important to learn from accidents. And I think it's important to remember that there are people behind those accidents as well, for whom this is really hard, and maybe they're affected in different ways. But I think finding ways to kind of own those stories as your own and kind of give some of the reins to the people who went through that is really important.
You know, Eliza, one thing that occurs to me is, like, you've been an active skier in the backcountry for years. You've been a patroller, but then there's this thing happens that we sort of always know is a possibility, but we never quite think it's going to happen to us. If we're all in that position, we all sort of probably experience a similar shock when it does actually happen. Talk about that a little bit.
One of the things that this accident was for me was this wake up call in this, I think I was really humbled by it in terms of realizing that this happens to all of us, and that, yeah, we might hear that, and I don't think it really lands until we have some experience, whatever that looks like, but anywhere kind of on that spectrum. Being able to talk about the reality that life in the mountains is also about loss.
Yeah.
And I think if I can imagine an ideal sort of like future for us as a community, it's a community that I think can acknowledge that trauma is not just about what happens to us, but about not having people that see us in that experience of experiencing loss and trauma.
Justin, for folks out there that are thinking they might want to learn more about your group or a group in their community, or thinking about, hey, we need a group like this in our community, what sort of general recommendations would you offer?
Yeah, I would say they could go to my website, ridgelinecounselingmt, as in Montana.com, and on my community engagement page, I have a flyer for the group. And I would also welcome anyone who wants to email me or call me if they're interested in learning more about, you know, how to start a group like this.
Sure.
I'm more than happy to have a conversation with them. This group right now is in person only. And so if you can find your way to Bozeman, and we've had people drive from Missoula and from Jackson Hole, the group is open to them for sure.
Okay.
But yeah, I would say just reach out. And I'd like to just have a conversation with you if you want to learn more.
Thanks to the both of you, Eliza in particular, the courage in sharing your story, I think, will pay huge dividends in terms of, you've done a big service to listeners out there, and I really appreciate you having the courage and grace to share your experiences here.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity.
That sounds great. Thank you for allowing us to be on your show.
Thanks for listening to A New Angle. We really appreciate it. And we're coming to you from Studio 49, a generous gift from UM alums Michelle and Warren Hansen. A New Angle is presented by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and the University of Montana College of Business, with additional support from Consolidated Electrical Distributors, Drum Coffee, and Montana Public Radio. Keely Larson is our producer. Maddie Jordan is our production assistant. VTO Jeff Ament and John Wicks made our music. And Jeff Meese is our master of all things sound. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.